Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're devoting the hour to a company that touches 40% of Californians with a troubled history. PG&E is the largest utility company in the country, with customers spanning just south of the Oregon border to Bakersfield. The name has become synonymous with the deadliest and some of the most destructive wildfires in state history. PG&E has been blamed for more than 30 wildfires since 2017, destroying thousands of homes and killing more than 100 people. The utility giant also provides natural gas, emerging from federal probation from the deadly San Bruno gas explosion in 2010. I spoke with Patty Poppe to discuss inheriting wide-ranging and deep-rooted issues. Since becoming CEO in January of 2021, she has promised to overhaul not just the system of PG&E, but also the culture. In Poppe's words, getting out of disaster response and moving to disaster prevention. Patty, you're about a year and a half into this position as CEO of PG&E, and you came as president of a utility company in Michigan. You have a background in engineering. I'm curious, with that experience that you bring, what was your outside perspective of PG&E before even considering leading one of the largest utility companies in the country?
Yeah, you know, the utility industry is very connected to one another. We have very transparent relationships because we're not directly competing for customers. We share a lot of best practices. And so I had observed for a long time the challenges affecting California, Northern Central California in particular, and the PG&E service area and the company PG&E. And certainly knew that there was a big opportunity here to transform the operations, to transform the way that we both serve customers and deliver clean energy to the ambitions of the people of California. And so I was both a little daunted by the challenge. It seemed like it was going to be a big turnaround, was going to really be required, but I have a background in turnarounds. And so that was sort of up my alley. But what was really exciting was the idea to lead the clean energy transition here in California is just a great opportunity.
I want to set up some key challenges you were set to inherit. Just months prior to becoming CEO, PG&E emerged from bankruptcy. A fire victim trust was created for 70,000 wildfire victims as far back as 2015, including the Tubbs Fire, which killed 22 people, and the Camp Fire, which claimed at least 84 lives. I covered both of those wildfires. Not to mention, still under federal probation for the 2010 San Bruno natural gas explosion, which killed 8 people. What interested you about the job?
Well, I will tell you, as I watched from afar the wildfire coverage, and I had known about the San Bruno coverage and incident. In fact, the San Bruno incident transformed the entire industry in our gas safety practices. I knew that the people of California needed better, and I knew that we could be better. I, you know, was running a very successful utility that was very customer centric and focused on quality delivery. I, you know, am very close with people running other utilities who really do a great job for customers. And I knew that it was possible. In fact, one time the recruiter said to me, "Patty, now you just know it's a utility. You know how to run a utility." And so, though the challenges have been, I'd say, longstanding, I think the fundamentals of staying close to our customers, being customer-driven, have an operations mindset was going to work at PG&E. And we can already see sort of the small signs of progress that we're already experiencing.
Yeah. When you started in January of 2021, I believe you were the third CEO and fifth, including interim CEOs, within a roughly 4-year period. Some would say that that is a very fast revolving door. What sets you apart?
Well, I came to stay, number one. Certainly, I knew that this would be a long-term commitment, that we had a lot of work to do. It didn't get here overnight. We weren't going to turn it around overnight, but that I made a commitment to my team that I lead that I was here till we made it right and made it safe. And as long as the people of California will have me, I'll keep doing what we're doing here to really turn around PG&E and make it the company that customers can be proud and thankful for the service they receive.
When you first arrived as CEO and started doing, you know, a forensic analysis of what to improve upon, what stood out to you?
You know, some fundamental building blocks of great operations comes from transparency of performance on a daily basis, what I call the heartbeat of improvement, that every day we're committed to doing better than we did yesterday. But there's some basic operating tools that we could deploy. So we've implemented our lean operating system. And so that's, we've got some fundamentals that we're teaching the organization about how great operations are run. That's a big piece. And the other piece was making PG&E more local. You know, a utility like ours is at its best when we are closest to our customers, who happen to be our friends, our families, and our neighbors. You know, we're not shipping stuff over to, I don't know, Massachusetts. We're delivering products to our neighbors. And so we took the company and broke it into 5 regions with the intent of creating a more local feel. We call that a regional service model. It allows us to get closer to the unique needs. California is diverse. You know, we serve from basically Oregon down to Bakersfield. I like to say Bernie to Bakersfield. We have the opportunity to show up in a local way. The Bay Area has different needs than the Central Valley, than the South Coast, than the Northern Sierras. It's just a different service need, and we should show up relevant to those local communities. So our regional service model is already underway, and we can feel it making a real difference in those local communities.
I read that you're also a PG&E customer and that onboarding didn't go as planned.
Vicki, yes, I suppose I should tell that story. Yeah, when I signed up for service, and my husband took the marker to do that, he signed us up for service, and it turned out something went wrong in the sign-on process. And not too long after we moved in, one of my coworkers showed up to shut us off because we hadn't signed up for gas service. We had signed up for electric, but not gas. So that was a window into customer experience, customer orientation. And it was a great opportunity for me to meet our coworkers and learn a little more about our process. And every time something like that happens, Vicki, I groan like, oh my goodness. But then I think, well, okay, that's one more thing we can fix, and that'll make a difference for customers. And so we're going to be on a journey of continually improving the experience for our customers. We talk about it every day, and we work on it every day. And I can already feel the seeds of change in how things are happening for our customers.
Did the challenges that you were prepared for, did it exceed your expectations? Because within the first year, the Dixie Fire was sparked by PG&E equipment. Months later, a winter storm blew out power to tens of thousands across the Sierra foothills for weeks. What did those disasters teach you?
I would say that what I know about running a great utility is that challenges do happen. And in fact, there are times when a utility is at its best in a crisis. My goal is to get us out of sort of disaster response and get us into the disaster prevention business. And it's a different orientation for the team. And so I can't say that it was surprising per se, but it was definitely daunting, like the seriousness of what we do. It's one thing when you have an outage, you know, across the country, and at my previous utility, when we had an outage, yes, that was all hands on deck. Everybody worked to restore, and it was very important. But we didn't have to worry that a wildfire was going to start every time the wind blew. And so the seriousness of our challenge is borne by all of us. We definitely feel that every day. When I lay my head on the pillow at night and I can hear the wind blowing outside, I have a different feeling than I used to about the seriousness of it. In fact, I'll tell you a quick story, Vicki. We have one of our board members is a former four-star admiral in the U.S. Navy. He was the chief naval officer for, again, the U.S. Navy. He's on our board of directors. And I called him one Saturday because I wondered to myself, who else would understand the seriousness of this mission, like the life and death aspects of this mission? And of course, my admiral friend. So I called Admiral Ferguson and I asked him for his advice. And he said, oh, Patty, I should have given you this talk months ago. I give it to all my young commanders. And I'm like, well, I'm not young, but I'll take the coaching. So he said that real leaders thrive in an environment when they know that they are making it safer, that it is in fact safer because you are there. And I can unequivocally say that the way we are turning around the company is making it safer. It is, in fact, safer every single day than it was the day before. And I can see that because of our lean operating system. I can see the progress and the performance. Our Wildfire Command Center is a visual demonstration and a place where we gather to review our progress and what we need to do next and what we learned today and what we're going to do tomorrow. And that sense of progress fuels my energy. It gives me confidence that we're heading in the right direction. And I hope in time that your listeners, my customers, will know that they are safer because of our efforts. And that's an environment where a real leader can find great satisfaction and where I'm finding my purpose is being fulfilled in serving the people of California.
And we're going to dive into your vision for PG&E and investments, as well as overhauling a workflow when talking about that Wildfire Command Center in just a few moments. But I do want to give you an opportunity to talk about the settlements that were reached this year, $55 million for both the Dixie Fire and the 2019 Kincade Fire in Sonoma County, sparked by PG&E equipment. The settlements don't admit fault, but what do you want these civil settlements to represent?
Well, first and foremost, we've learned a lot about what it means to make it right. And in making it right, these settlements for me stood as an example of not just throwing money at it and hoping for the best, but rather, number one, getting restoration dollars to victims fast. So today, claimants are receiving an offer within 20 days of submitting their claim and receiving a payment within 47 days. That is a marked improvement over previous incidents. And we feel good about that because that allows people to get back on their feet. But it also, that settlement includes things like ongoing monitoring from an outside monitor to monitor that, in fact, in those six counties that we are doing what we said we were going to do. And I welcome that kind of transparency. I am not afraid to have people watch what we do because we're implementing this lean operating system. We have visual management that tells us on a daily basis. We have an operating review cadence and our heartbeat of improvement is alive and well. We know how we're doing. And so I'm not afraid for anyone to watch over our shoulder. I welcome the transparency. You know, we stand as a management team that catastrophic wildfires shall stop. That's a stand that this management team at PG&E has taken. And a settlement like this enables us to take additional steps beyond just our equipment and what we're going to do to prevent ignitions, but to help make our communities fire safe, understanding that lots of things can cause wildfire. Spread is a big part of the problem. Forest management and vegetation management having nothing to do with power lines is an area where we can be a big enabler. We know a lot. We've become very much experts in this area, and we feel very good about making our communities, our hometowns, safer through settlements like this. So I consider these settlements a real litmus test and maybe a signpost to the way that we can show up for our hometowns, taking accountability from the perspective of knowing that we have a role to make our communities safer in a variety of ways, and we're going to take the opportunity to do that.
A bill is sitting on the governor's desk that would protect ratepayers from their money being used in wildfire settlement agreements, both civil and criminal. The lawmaker used PG&E's pretrial settlement for the Dixie Fire as an example. That lawmaker says that the loophole exists, which prevents meaningful accountability because it can be offset on ratepayers. If it becomes law, then it would come from profits and shareholders. Where do you stand on this?
Yeah, I would just say that there are already in place a lot of rules that protect our customers from bearing the brunt of these incidents. And so our objective at all times is to make sure that we balance the needs of multiple stakeholders to address the recovery of funds for post-fire restitution and the settlements are funded through a variety of mechanisms, including things like insurance and other means. And so we also want to protect our customers from bearing undue costs in this construct. But we are working hard to make sure that our actions prevent the risk in the first place. And so our total focus on, again, is ending catastrophic wildfire. certainly caused by our equipment and keeping our customers safe.
I understand that this predates you, but where does the 2020 Zog fire stand? PG&E is facing criminal charges for the wildfire that killed four people.
Yeah, you know, the Zog fire, it did occur before I came. We continue to work through the settlements. In fact, most of the settlements are complete with victims for sure. And there's a variety for those four families. The settlements are complete. There are other longer term settlements that are in process, and we continue to work through that. But, you know, Vicki, I want to make it really understood by your listeners how serious this is to me. I wear on my blazer, whatever I'm wearing every day, I wear a little ladybug pin. And that pin is a reminder to me of Fela McLeod, who died in the Zog fire. She was an 8-year-old girl, and she and her mother died in their car trying to get out of the fire. I met with Fela and Elena's family. It was a heartbreaking day for me to see the firsthand devastation to a family unit in the loss of a family member in such a terrifying way. And it fuels me. I personally, and my entire team, get up every day to make sure that never happens again.
And I bring this up because when we're talking about settlements, I mean, that also follows the fire victim trust, and I've covered that a good amount. And the trusts, like civil settlements, are meant to accelerate payments for wildfire victims, as you just said. But the money from the trust hasn't been even entirely distributed, and that has been criticized from the beginning. And there's been criticism that half of the $13 billion or so is bound to stock values. And I bring this up because I covered the Camp Fire. I spoke with Camp Fire victims since ignition, and in the weeks, months, and in some cases, years since, they're still rebuilding. Some are in RVs on plots of land. And in this instance, PG&E pled guilty to 84 counts of manslaughter. This is more than money for them. It is a sense of closure. How do you reconcile that?
Yeah, I'll start by saying it's as frustrating to us as it is to anyone that it takes so long. I will also say that, again, it is motivating to me to know that I can help victims more by turning this company around, because our interests are inextricably linked. I didn't come up with that construct. I'm a recipient of it. And so I'm not going to assess whether it's good or bad, but I will say, given what it is, the best thing I can do for victims, since I'm not in charge of dispersing those funds, the best thing I can do for those victims is run PG&E extraordinarily well. Number one, prevent it from occurring again, and regain the trust of investors who represent moms and pops, 401ks, and retirement funds. That's who owns PG&E shares. That's who owns PG&E stock, not big Wall Street hedge funds. There were hedge funds involved at the bankruptcy, and they got their payday and they left. But who's left behind, the shareholders that we're talking about, are moms and pops whose life savings are in the form of PG&E stock through a retirement fund, what have you. The best thing I can do is gain the trust of other investors to invest more in PG&E, and that will increase the payout to both victims and those moms and pops who own the shares of our company. So I find that there's a strange symbiotic relationship between our shareholders and the victims, and both of them require that we run PG&E well. And so again, boils down to, what can I do about all that? What I can do is regain the trust of my customers and regain the trust of people who would be making choices about where to invest their capital.
I want to give you an opportunity to respond to a report in Mercury News that as CEO, you took in more than $50 million last year, combination of salary, bonus, and stock value. I mean, that was more than double your predecessor, Bill Johnson.
Yeah, it's a little misleading, the headline, Vicki. So thank you for actually asking the question. I'd love to straighten out the facts here a little bit. There was a one-time payment for me taking the job that is reflected there, that was money I had already earned because my previous company was very successful in delivering for customers, in finding this way of delivering for both shareholders and customers, those moms and pops who own the shares, plus the customers. Our success was real. That's why they wanted me to come to PG&E. And so that was a straight, direct one-for-one. I had already earned those dollars, but would forfeit if I left the company. The board of PG&E felt it was important to have an experienced, operating-minded executive. And so they had to make whole that payment that I had already received from my previous employer. So that was the mass, that was the majority, more than the majority of that 1 year payment. My annual salary going forward is very much in line with my peers across the industry.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with PG&E CEO Patti Poppe. We'll have more in a couple minutes. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.